You are now listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast, where the worlds of sports medicine and performance collide. My name is Mike Quintons. I'm a physical therapist with an entrepreneurial mindset that specializes in treating orthopedic and sports injuries. I'm bringing on the brightest and sharpest in the field of sports medicine to share their best practices and explore the gap where medicine meets performance. What's up, Performance Therapy Nation? This is Mike Quintons, your host of the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. After what has been almost a one-year hiatus, we have brought back the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast, and it's back and better than ever with a new format of 20-minute single-topic focused content, and I will be joined by strength conditioning coach Rob Rubina for most, if not all, of season four. Rob is the newest member of the team, formerly known as the Physical Therapy and Wellness Institute, and have finally rebranded to Ivy Rehab Physical Therapy in Newtown Square. Rob is currently the Director of Strength and Conditioning at Ivy Rehab Physical Therapy, Newtown Square West Clinic. Prior to that, he was the Director of Sports Performance at Ascent Athlete, where he trained numerous MLB, professional, college, high school, and youth athletes. Rob is an adjunct professor at Widener University, Doctor of Physical Therapy Program, and Cabrini University for undergraduate students in exercise science. Rob is a fitness consultant for Altus Movement Technologies and has published research on conditioning for baseball. Rob has an MS in exercise science and completed an internship at Cressy Sports Performance in Boston, Massachusetts. He has presented multiple times at the NSCS on best practices for assessment and program design as it pertains to athletes. Our special guest today is Mario Mascioli in a three-part series where we dive into his experiences as an athletic trainer for the Philadelphia 76ers and their G League affiliate, the Delaware Bluecoats. His philosophies and approaches to athlete performance and rehab services will be discussed, as well as his strategies to address knee pain in jumping athletes, as well as his approach to mitigating the risk of injuries in all jumping athletes and other athletes as well. But before we get rolling with Mario, I want to take a second to thank our listeners and subscribers for their support as we are officially into season four. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and write a review. I encourage you to leave a five-star rating as well as share questions or topics you want discussed in the reviews. These ratings and reviews will allow others to check out the podcast and find it a little bit easier. Mario Mascioli is a professional athletic trainer and performance coach. He is dual credentialed as a certified athletic trainer and certified strength conditioning specialist. He earned a bachelor's degree in athletic training at Westchester University of Pennsylvania with a background in sports medicine. He specializes in helping anyone work around injuries or recover from them. In addition, he has skills in soft tissue therapy to help clients recover from fatigue, such as massage, myofascial release, and cupping, to name a few. His career started off as an assistant athletic trainer at St. Joe's University in Philadelphia before working with the 76ers and their G League affiliate, the Delaware Bluecoats, for over 5 years. After that, he focused more on his work on strength conditioning, creating his own business called Mass Movement. He has worked with a wide population of people, from young middle school athletes to professional athletes to middle-aged weekend warriors and the elderly. He has a passion not only for helping young athletes perform, but in teaching holistic health. Welcome to the show, Mario. How you doing, man?
Hey, Mike. Very good. Pleasure to be here.
I'm pleased to not be talking anymore. What an intro. Jeez Louise.
That was electric.
I appreciate that, man.
Thanks. So let's get into this. So we got about 20 minutes here. So you have been the athletic trainer for the 76ers G League affiliate. I want to learn a little bit more about that. How long ago was that? And what was that experience like?
Sure. Particularly the G League affiliate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all of the above.
Yeah, sure. So in 2013 is when I came on to the Sixers organization as an intern. The G League roles came several years after that, and that ended in 2018. So it was about a 5-6 year stint. But I was working at St. Joseph's University at the time with baseball and softball as an athletic trainer. The 76ers had training camp there, and that's where I ended up meeting the staff. They were looking for an intern at the time, and it kind of was just right place, right time. Got that gig and worked to keep myself into a position there that ultimately lasted, you know, a few years.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of responsibilities did you have while you were there?
Yeah. I mean, it ranged all over. You know, starting off, it was more grunt work, right? Doing your time. So I like to call myself the hydration therapist when I started off, because it made me feel better about what I was doing. I mean, all those guys who were before me dealt with that stuff, you know, stocking fridges, coolers. We recorded everything they drank there. So that was actually a big responsibility, because we are trying to give as best like hydration advice as possible to each player. The next year, I kind of took on more responsibilities with staying back for guys who were injured and carrying out treatment or going to like out-of-state surgeries to help guys post-op. And eventually, I started to travel with the team and just assist with all treatment and rehabilitation. When I started to really be able to make decisions on those things was when I started working the G League as the head athletic trainer. And that involved more than the athletic training responsibilities. You had some roles with nutrition and with travel coordinating and equipment. It was just a whole different game.
I got to go back to the tracking of what fluid intake, water intake, all the above. How did you guys do that?
What we ended up doing was each athlete had two bottles of 32 ounces. One was for Gatorade, one was for water. There was either like a clear line or the whole bottle was clear, so you could see the fluid in there. And throughout practice and a game, we would just be monitoring, you know, when it was getting close to the bottom. If it got close, we marked that down, usually even on paper sometimes, or in an iPad, in an app that we were using. And then we'd refill it and we'd just keep doing that. And at the end of every game in practice, we'd look at them again, record everything that was, you know, had been drunk, and then just tally it all up. And so by the end of the week, we had a good idea of what each player was drinking, and we had someone come in and do sweat testing. So it was getting kind of like the content of their sweat, like how salty, so to speak, was their sweat, and then also how much they sweat. And based on that, we could give a good estimate of what they needed and be like, hey, you're here, we need you to be here, or you're good.
Gotcha. So yeah. So that was your way of tracking, assessing, and then an intervention, right? Drink this or this much more, or maybe it was like electrolytes.
Something right. Yeah. Or electrolytes. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like one of those 1% difference things. If you take a bunch of different variables and you change by 1%, like that adds up over time. So I think that's kind of what they were going for. Yeah. Obviously, hydration is important.
Sure. Yeah. My gosh. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm curious your take on this, Rob. You know, with baseball and high level athletes there, amongst other sports, tracking with nutrition, health.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, is there a registered dietitian involved at all in this process? Like, what was their take on this, and how did they play a part in that?
Sure. Yeah. The registered dietitian, when I was with the Sixers, I didn't interact with a ton because the staff was rather large. So everyone had like their role. She definitely was involved. I wish I could give you more of a sense of how involved she was.
Yeah. I just feel like that's like tough stuff. And I feel like the RD would want to be heavily involved in that and know that so that she can also help with prescribing food as well as fluids.
Maybe I'm speculating here. It may be something where she has more of a role with the like food intake, caloric intake, whereas like, all right, like you can take care of, make sure that they're hydrated, got the right amount of like salt intake, electrolytes, et cetera, like that there are balances there.
That's what I think was going on. I mean, you had Jesse Wright on the show, right?
Yeah.
And so he was responsible for a lot of that. And I think he did that. And then our dietitian took care of a lot of the individual food. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But she definitely was involved.
Any other like tracking technologies that you found were beneficial as, again, like you're doing both sides of it, right? ATC, strength conditioning. So from both avenues, were there any tracking technologies that you found were extremely beneficial or you were relying on a daily basis?
So every day we used tracking devices like Catapult and Kinexon. So tracking, you know, had a GPS. So distance traveled, right, on court, acceleration, deceleration, the velocity of that acceleration or deceleration, the amount, jumps, jump height, speed. And then we used a heart rate monitor as well sometimes. But that was used every day to collect data to make decisions about practice, and then sometimes for guys return to play. So like for me personally, there were a few major lower body rehabs that I did in the summer with guys. And there was a technology we were using called iMeasureU. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but that was really helpful because it did a lot of the same things as Kinexon, but per limb, right? So you can really see compensation.
Wow.
And that was really helpful in creating a safe progression or changing what we were doing to kind of get that athlete back as fast as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. And thresholds, Are you familiar with any like formulas for thresholds on any kind of these? I guess it all depends on the app, right? And what technology you're using.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of, how much involved were you with the sports scientist who was like taking all this data?
Yeah, so that was something where I helped a lot with it, making sure it all set up. But outside of that, you know, I wasn't playing as much of a role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, each one has a different algorithm. So it's not perfect, but I think one of the ideas was if you do take the data down consistently and you do that over a long period of time, you're still going to get a pattern that you can see and hopefully use to help.
Oh yeah. It's interesting. I mean, this is where sports are going, right? Like especially professional sports, they have resources. So, you know, how can we use our technology to best, I mean, to even get asymmetries like between limbs? I mean, that's load management, right?
Right. Yeah. Load management.
That's interesting.
Why don't you explain for the listeners? Like, because I feel like load management is like a popular term in basketball.
Yeah,
it is.
Why don't you explain what that is from like your point of view, why that's important or if it's not important?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a very popular term and topic in NBA.
Definitely.
Load management.
Definitely. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's a funny term to me because even the coaches were very frustrated with that term because they were like, tell me, what does that mean? Like, if you say, I don't understand, you know, so to me in layman's terms, it's trying to determine or put a number to internal stress as best as you can. And so if you have a lower body injury, just as an example, you're managing the amount of stress or force that gets put through that joint that's injured in order to make sure there isn't a re-injury or that it heals quickly. You give it enough time to heal. So managing the load would just be managing the stress that is put through that specific area. And yeah, these technologies are being used to try to make decisions as best as possible.
You're trying to objectify something. Essentially is what it is.
You're trying to objectify something, but it is hard to objectify because there's so many variables. So
sleep,
right?
Diet, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's so many.
Right.
I'll care for hours just about the variables that go into it. That's a good definition. Would you define it any differently?
No, I mean, I love that definition. Do you feel like the players were caring about that? Did they like that? Did they not like it? Did they just want to play? Like, what's the player's take on that?
That's a great question, because a lot of the stuff that was getting implemented when I was there was new for the team. There was a lot of change going on when I was there with the Sixers. And so a lot of buy-in and talking about buy-in and how do we get buy-in was, you know, discussed. And so I think it's a mix. It really depends on the player. Some guys are just not going to care, right? And, you know, some of those guys also might not care so much about the treatment either. And then there's guys that, you know, they're actually interested in the details, right? You know, they find it fascinating or they care about their body. They're like, they and there's trust. So the more trust, then the better it would go.
Interesting.
Rapport always comes back to that.
It does.
And trust, right? Rapport, right. Trust. Yeah. All the above. Are there any treatment philosophies that you focused on? I know we mentioned a couple earlier, soft tissue techniques, cupping. Is there anything that you really, your bread and butter in terms of your treatment approach? Soft tissue, joint, hands off, hands on.
Yeah, I would say the two things that come to mind are some type of hands-on manual therapy. And I think that's because it develops some type of connection. And definitely, even if it's not doing a ton physiologically to change or create change or healing, I think placebo effect is very strong. And again, I think there's something about developing some type of connection with yourself and the client. So I'm big on that. And I do find that I get good results from it. But then I try to movement as much as possible. Movement and strengthening as much as possible. I think those are the main things that lead to recovery. So I try not to have people on the table too much or just dependent, right? Or thinking that if I get this stim or if I get this massage, like that's the thing that's going to heal me. It's like, no, it's the other stuff.
I think very similarly. I've said, been very clear about this on the podcast. Too much manual is not a good thing. Some, I think, you know, the right amount, finding that. And if the patient doesn't believe in manual, I'm not going to force it on them either, right?
Absolutely.
Right? You follow me on that? So I think, well said, develop that connection, load the tissue, How do you feel about like any philosophies on terms of like upper cross syndrome or lower cross syndrome or tight hip flexors, weak hamstrings, like, you know, some of that type stuff in terms of assessing, identifying, loading adjacent tissues? We could talk an hour about that in of itself, but like,
yeah,
like in terms of exercise prescription, right? Mm-hmm. What were some philosophies?
Sure. Yeah. I think you could definitely see, at least with basketball players, there were a lot of patterns. I think that lower cross syndrome was one of them. I don't like jump right to that, right? Because sometimes I think things can be more complex than that. And just with postural restoration and pelvic posture, learning about that has changed my thought on when I look at someone and I hear about, oh, they're tight here, you know, but why? Is it just because their muscles are tight? I think I move away from that a lot now. So, but I mean, looking at range of motion was definitely one thing. And then prescribing some basic daily prescriptions, you know, for people. And I would say especially for ankle, because most of the basketball players that I've come across, they have horrible ankle dorsiflexion. And then that plays into, you know, other joints like knees and possible knee pain. So getting them some things that could over time help with their mobility or their strength in that area, in the ankle or the hip.
How often were you doing ankle exercises in open chain? Meaning for our listeners, foot not on the ground, not fixed, right? Versus closed chain, which is when the foot would be fixed. So like a squat would be more closed chain, and then open chain would be, you know, banded exercise and sitting. There's a bunch of other ones, but essentially the foot is not fixed. So yeah. Any thoughts on some of that when you're talking mobility, stability?
Yeah, I mean, I'm for both. I'm completely for both. I think the band work is great initially, but after that, like, it's, you know, closed chain is mostly where I'm going to work with guys, because that's how they operate. We walk, we play on our feet, proprioception, and then trying to have them activate and control their hips and their glutes in different ways on a single leg. So yeah, if I do band work, I'd want to do like high rep, because I feel like, I don't know, I've just thought that's going to be most beneficial, build that muscular endurance. But then after that, it's like, get them on the ground.
And I'm going to pivot over to you on this, Rob. Ways of deloading or closed chain, but not loading, right? But while coordinating some of the other, because you've taught me some of that stuff since we've gotten on board.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with Mara. I think like both are definitely good and definitely use both at different times. But at the end of the day, you definitely need to get the foot on the ground and trying to find ways to keep the pelvis into like a neutral or posterior pelvic tilt as much as possible for these, especially basketball athletes, I think is going to help decrease some of the tone in the posterior musculature down the hamstring, down the calf, which will aid in the improvement in some ankle dorsiflexion. You know, sometimes like the ankle issue isn't always the ankle issue. I feel like it definitely sometimes be, you know, stemming up the chain to the pelvis. So if we can work on both at the same time and you're working on keeping the pelvis underneath you while driving some ankle dorsiflexion, I found that be a great way to get some more dorsiflexion. But yeah, I want to get back to the ankle, Mara. Do you feel like with basketball players, you see more, like, what's your, like, the most common injuries that you see that you saw with your time with the Sixers? Is it ankle? Is it knee? Was it a little bit of both?
Yeah, by far, ankle is the number one injured joint in the NBA. And, you know, they collect data on this every year. And then they give it out to the medical staff, and it's always ankle. There's just so many instances where, because of the jumping in a crowded area, right, where you're going to land on someone else's foot. Yep. And that's kind of the number one contributor. It's not just guys cutting and turning their ankle. It's landing on that unstable surface. So by far that, you know, knees, I would say probably be second. Just yeah, because of, it doesn't have to even be a major, you know, injury. It could be just tendinopathies and things like that.
Yeah. So like, how often are you guys doing preventative care or mitigating the risk of these types of injuries? Like, I feel like everyone's watched pregame warmups, like guys have bands or doing side steps or doing like mostly closed chain for the legs, but it's more dynamic, right? Do you consider that like more, is that mitigating risk of injury? Is that a warmup? Probably one and the same, but curious, like, were there any philosophies that you implemented or you kind of spearheaded there, especially with ankles in particular?
Right. No, that's a great question. So in my work with the Sixers as an assistant, again, I wasn't making as much of the treatment decisions, And I would say that most of the time, what I would see is if someone had had an injury that took them out for a considerable amount of time, let's say anywhere between 2 weeks or more, they might get a little more serious about that. So whatever we prescribed them and said, hey, we want you to do this now before every game of practice, some guys would really take to that. And then now it's just a part of their routine forever. I've seen that a lot with guys who've gotten ACLs.
Yeah.
Like they'd come in, a college player coming into pre-draft workout, and they have this whole routine I'm seeing them go through on their own because they had some type of major knee injury before, and they found the benefit of doing this sequence of exercises. For me personally, when I was in the G League, I started to try to implement stuff beforehand, even if guys hadn't sprained their ankle or anything, depending on what, you know, what their history was. And so I think that's a good approach to take.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And so you see the same thing in a lot of other sports too. Did you see anything change over the time you were there? Like anything like in terms of rehabilitation services or technologies? Like I remember in PT school, someone came in, I forget the company, but came in to teach us about laser treatment. Said all the NBA teams got them. And I was like, wait, how much is this machine? They're like 20 to 25 grand. And I was like, whoa. It's like, the only people who can afford that is our NBA or the, you know, professional level teams. So have you, what treatments have you seen change during your time, whether G League or
Sixers? Yeah, no, that's the benefit of pro teams is they could just get whatever they want. We definitely utilize laser therapy. I saw a lot change because the staff from when I went there went from like five or six people. And I'm including the strength and conditioning staff. And we had a massage therapist. And then there were two athletic trainers. And then I got added on as an intern. And then there might have been a strength training intern as well. From the first year I was there till when I left after like year five or six, we may have had like 15 to 18 people on staff.
Wow.
It was nuts.
Literally tripled.
Yeah. So one thing that got utilized was ultrasound. We had a physical therapist by the name of Scott Epsley. He's from Australia. I thought he was brilliant. He was very proficient in ultrasound. And so we could use that regularly for injuries. And then that was used in, you know, helping identify progression and healing and return to play. There was always like gadgets reviewed kind of every year. And I'm trying to think of anything that really jumped out. There was like ultrasound, like pods, wireless ultrasound pods. I don't really use ultrasound anymore, but it was, anything we could try, we would try.
That's that 1% concept, right?
Yeah.
Like ultrasound in school for us, at least. I mean, and we don't even have an ultrasound machine in this clinic, right? And that's, I'm not talking trash. I mean, it all depends on the machine. That's really what it comes down to. If you want depth of heat, right, or warmth, it all depends on the quality of the machine. So if you're getting varying depth, then it doesn't matter, right? But how long does that heat last? And then what are the benefits of that heat? And then can you warm up right afterwards? Then it'd be a little bit more beneficial, right? You're warming that tissue up. So it's a consistency of the machine, which is like about like a something to do with like a diamond, not diamond, but some kind of jewel or gem or something.
And
similar like watches in some ways. But nonetheless, how about like cupping? You mentioned that before. Scraping.
Yeah. So definitely I would say when I got there wasn't a lot of instrument assisted soft tissue mobilization being done. But then in the 5 years I was there, we began to use it a lot. Another one was shockwave therapy. That was something that after like the third year I was there, we really started looking into and was used several times for certain cases.
Yeah, usually knee pain. What did you say?
Yeah.
Knee pain. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. You got anything else to add on some of this?
No, I mean, this is great stuff, guys.
this is cool to get this kind of insight, seriously. You know? And the fact that like ultrasound, like if I were to say which of the following were not utilized, I would in a second say ultrasound, but because it's literally like poo-pooed in the PT world. But obviously the first thing you said, this dude is brilliant. The first thing you said. So I'm sure there's some type of research
you know what?
And it might've been, there's also ultrasound for like to visualize tissue as well. We see that a lot, like as a diagnostic.
I didn't speak clearly. So when I said we utilize ultrasound, I meant ultrasound imaging. So not ultrasound as a treatment modality. And that's what I meant in terms of, you know, I don't use that really anymore. And when I got to the G League, I didn't use it as much. I used it if someone asked for it.
Right.
Because if they believed in it, then I would use it. I really would, because I think belief is very powerful. But no, ultrasound imaging. So that's where he could use that almost every day for an injury, kind of diagnosing, tracking a progression. I thought that was really neat.
I love that. That's a wrap on part one with strength conditioning coach and athletic trainer Mario Massioli. Tune in to episode two.
Thanks for listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. If you like this episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It would mean so much to me if you could leave us a 5-star review so more listeners like you could get this important information. See you next time.